Today we'll discuss some aspects of Bhagavat Tattva, Bhagavat, or the philosophy of the Srimad Bhagavatam, by accepting some questions in regard to various aspects, various points that have arisen in the practice and consideration of Bhagavad philosophy. So your question, or it was maybe Murari Gupta's question, is it obligatory for the disciple to follow the instruction of a guru which is not, the instruction which is not spiritual? And the example is given that if the guru tells you to go from Bangalore to Salem by train instead of by road, are you obliged to follow that? If you feel that actually it's better to go by road? That's the question. That's an example. And you have other questions also. The answer to this could take up a whole class easily. And it's not just a matter of yes and no. Should you follow? Yes. Should you follow? Maybe. Should you follow? No. These are possible answers to this question. Another possible answer is, don't ask such a stupid question. It's another possible answer, but I don't think it's a stupid question. I think it's a reasonable and important question. Should one follow all instructions of the guru? Material and spiritual. Is it obligatory for the disciple to do so? In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita is quoted from Ramayana, in which I can't remember the Sanskrit, I don't know. In which it's quoted that the order of the guru should be followed, and in this case, it's the order of Dasharath, who is not the guru in the sense that this question has been asked, I presume. It means one's diksha guru, or one's guide in spiritual life. But here the word guru is used, and the point is made that one has to follow the order of the guru, even if it seems unreasonable or could be moderated, adjusted. But Ramchandra Bhagavan felt himself obliged to follow that order. It wasn't a spiritual order, but it wasn't an order meant for directly for his spiritual progress. Of course, Ram doesn't make spiritual progress. He is spiritual progress. He's the goal of all spiritual progress. But Ramchandra Bhagavan, as Maryada Purushottam, or the Supreme Lord, who comes to set the limits of human behavior. Maryada literally means limit, and it's usually translated as etiquette. But what Ramchandra Bhagavan was exhibiting was the adherence to dharma, what we call in English etiquette, is much more meaningfully understood in Vedic culture as adherence to dharma. So Ramchandra Bhagavan was showing that the order of the Father has been given, one has to follow it, even if it seems unreasonable, or even if it could be, it would seem that for the sake of everyone concerned, if that order wasn't followed, it would be better. Everyone except maybe Kaikeyi and Mantara and Bharat, although Bharat, he didn't like that, although Kaikeyi thought he would like that, to have Ram exiled to the forest. And even Dasharath, he wanted to withdraw, but Ram wouldn't let him because he thought, well, that's you gave me an order, and that was in fulfillment to your promise to Kaikeyi to give her a boon. So he wanted to save his father from going back on dharma, for going back on his word. And even more shocking example is that of Parashuram, who was ordered by his father Jamadagni to cut off the head of his mother, Renuka, which he did. That's illegal. If you did that nowadays, if your father told you to cut off your mother's head, and you did it and cited Srimad Bhagavatam as evidence, that wouldn't get you off in the court case. You'd be convicted as a criminal for killing your mother. But Parashuram did so with the faith that his father is such a great person that what he orders, even if it goes against all common sense and dharma and everything that anyone might think to be correct, that if he orders me to do so, it must be a good reason for doing so, and he will not do anything adharmic. He could not conceive that he could do anything adharmic. So without hesitation, he cut off his mother's head. And of course, Jamadagni was quite competent to restore life to his mother, which he did so immediately. When being pleased with Parashuram, he offered him a boon. He said, okay, bring him back to life again. He had faith that he could do that. Bring her back to life again. So Parashuram had full faith that his guru, in this case his father, was what he ordered would never be anything against the principles of dharma. Yudhishthira Maharaj said a similar thing when he came to marry Draupadi along with four brothers, and Drupad was against it. He said, well, this is completely against the principles of dharma. A woman can't marry five husbands. And Yudhishthira Maharaj offered as evidence that it was not adharmic by saying that nothing, I approve of this, and nothing adharmic can come in my mind. It's not possible. So not everyone can say that, but Yudhishthira Maharaj can say that. So the principle is that one should follow the order of Guru with the conviction that he knows better than I do, even if it seems not like that. Now, there are various grades of order also, and generally a Guru won't order, you must go by train from Bangalore to Salem, it's my order, you must not go by road, because generally, it won't make that much difference whether you go by road or train. I mean, from the spiritual point of view, it won't make much difference. Although he may suggest that for some reason, thinking that for whatever reason, you can imagine there's too many traffic jams on the road. But the disciple may think, well, we're just giving hypothetical case here. Well, he probably doesn't know that the road construction is finished, the traffic jams are a thing of the past on that road, and you can go quickly and conveniently. It's better to go by road. So anyway, the guru is not likely to order over such a minor point. But he may say it's better to go by train than by road. Now, if one doesn't follow that because one thinks that actually knows better, That's not as serious as transgressing the order against, for instance, engaging in illicit sex. It's not. You disobeyed me. You didn't follow the principles. You disobeyed me. You went by road instead of by train. It's not on the same level, obviously. Nevertheless, the attitude of accepting the guru as being in a superior position, it's important to maintain that. Now, what happens if, for instance, you do go by road instead of by train, as the guru had said, and then you find out that actually the traffic jams are still going on, and you get delayed for many hours, and you come later and you weren't able to do the service on time that you were supposed to? That would be very bad. Or if you did come earlier and you could do your service more thoroughly or quickly, or that might be better. You know, for the sake of one might think, well, I have a service to do in Salem, so I can get there more quickly. Of course, you could also say to the guru that, well, actually, the traffic situation is much better now. You could also say that. It's not that guru told me to go by train, but actually I think it's better. You can also say, I think it's better to go by road. You may not be informed. There's sometimes devotees think, well, guru knows everything about everything, but that's not necessarily true. There are many instances of this. Srila Prabhupada was, I can't remember exactly the details of the incident, but I believe it was Hridayananda Maharaj was reporting that he was just saying to Prabhupada, not reporting, but he was in the causes. He was saying, well, Harishari Prabhu was talking to this woman and a disciple who wanted to meet Prabhupada, and Prabhupada became angry. He said, why was he speaking to a woman? He's a brahmachari. And then either Hridayananda Maharaj or Harishari Prabhu said, well, actually, I'm not Prabhupada, I'm married. He had been in Prabhupada's service for some weeks or months, but he'd never told Prabhupada that he was married, actually. He was wearing white, but Prabhupada had presumed that he was a brahmachari because he never saw his wife. Prabhupada never saw Harishari Prabhu's wife, and it seems that Harishari Prabhu also never saw his wife, because otherwise Prabhupada would have noticed that. So then Prabhupada said, oh, I didn't know. That's all. So, but it may be that you'll see like that with Prabhupada. He doesn't know something. And he's told, oh, all right, now I know. On the other hand, it may seem that sometimes Prabhupada knew things almost mystically that others didn't know. And there are many instances of this also. Many instances. When Prabhupada on the last ever journey he made from Bombay to Vrindavan, he was going by the Paschim Express. So that devotee who is now known as Srinathji, that Narendra Desai, businessman, he was taking Prabhupada in his American car, and Prabhupada was hurrying up, go faster, go faster. He said, well, we've got plenty of time. And they arrived just before the train left, because that day the train timing had changed after, you know, maybe 40 or 50 or 60 years, they changed the train timing. Now, how Prabhupada knew and no one else knew, we don't know. It might have been that it was in the newspaper and Prabhupada saw it, but we don't know. And it seems mystical. And there are many instances like that. Where one Mataji devotee, I believe it was in Los Angeles, she had the idea to bring the bhog from the kitchen to the altar covered in a cloth, which hadn't been done previously, so that no one would see it as it was being taken. So that was a very good idea. She did that for the first time. She did it. As she did it, Prabhupada happened to be sitting on the Vyasasan, giving class or whatever in the temple room. So she brought it with a cloth covering it, and then she took the cloth off and she was about to close the curtain, and Prabhupada said, "You're such a fool, you brought the cloth to cover the offering, but then you should have closed the curtains so that others wouldn't see it, but then you should have closed the curtain before you uncovered the offering." So how Prabhupada knew that she'd done this, we don't know. It's, you can say, mystical. So when Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Do you know everything?" he said, "Well, I know what Krishna wants me to know." So sometimes Srila Prabhupada exhibited what you might call very human behavior, and at other times he exhibited superhuman behavior. But actually he always exhibited superhuman behavior, because everything he did was Krishnate Akhila Chishta. Everything he did was for the sake of Krishna, for serving Krishna. And that is the essence of his being guru, in the fully spiritual sense. The guru is father, mother, any elder. All such persons are called guru, but in the prime meaning of the guru is Agyanati Nirandhasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam, opening the darkened eyes by the application of, by the operation, opening the eyes by giving spiritual knowledge. Now, we generally see that there is something mystic going on here in the guru-disciple relationship. How that works? Pidyate hridaya grantish chidyante sarva sanshayaha. How that works, that the words of the self-realized person enter the heart of the disciple and cut the attachments in the heart and they pierce the attachments in the heart and cut all doubts. How does that work? How is it that the spiritual master often seems to know the mind of the disciple, or comes in dreams of disciples? Well, like everything else in this world, it's going on by the agency of Paramatma. Yesterday we were talking about in music, when people play together music for some time, they get to know each other. If it's whatever, it's like someone's playing drums and someone's playing electric guitar, or in our case, kautar. And you get, so there's some kind of psychic bonding, so that you can, each the other, they know each other, that when one's just about to change the beat, even without looking or without hearing, you just know it's going to happen. And so the music goes on very, even if it's done spontaneously, it goes on very nicely, because there's everyone's completely in sync with each other. And I gave an example yesterday of a football team or so. When they play together for some time, there's a kind of psychic bonding. So sometimes you can, like, you almost know that this player's here, even though you don't have time to look up and see him. You just pass the ball and it goes to him like that. So this, how does that happen? That happens by the agency of Paramatma, and that we often see in among saintly people, various siddhis. But it seems that especially among our recent acharyas, they haven't emphasized this very much. They don't talk about it very much, and they certainly don't claim that as being one of the qualifications of being guru. But rather, they always stress what is stated in Shastra, that the Shabde Pared Chanishnatam Brahmanyu Pashamashrayam, that one who is qualified to be a guru should be dunked, that means completely immersed in Shabda, which means here Vedic sound, spiritual knowledge. And one who has fully taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead by the Parampara system. So these are the qualifications of a guru, not his ability to see different beings flying in the sky, which may or not be true, so I may say that, but you know, it's not verifiable. Or to read someone's mind, or to know when the train timing is changed, even though no one informed. These are not the... This doesn't constitute the essence of the guru-disciple relationship. We were also discussing yesterday about some particular bogus guru who is very popular at the present time. And, yeah, at the present time, because, you know, these glowworms, they come and go. So such persons, they tend to emphasize this kind of thing, and their bogus gurus get bogus followers, and they, you know, I saw light coming from his hair. They tend to emphasize this kind of thing. They say something, what were you saying this? He was saying, why do you doubt? I'm always with you. Prabhupada would say things like that sometimes also, but it wasn't, he didn't make like a trade of it, or that wasn't like, that wasn't the everything about his guruship, that never fear, I'm here, this kind, I'm always with you. He actually explained what that meant, Prabhupada, that the right in, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, even before the introduction, in his dedication, that this is dedicated to my spiritual master, Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa, Parirajaka Acharya Ashtavitara Sata Sri Srimad, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Prabhupada. He lives forever by his divine instructions, and the follower lives with him. So the disciple, or the guru is always with the disciple in the form of his instructions. Like this. So there are many mystic experiences, no doubt, of people seeing Prabhupada in their dream or in their waking state or whatever. But Prabhupada himself, he didn't keep much stock on this kind of thing. Once he was discussing how he said some woman had claimed that when she was circumambulating Jagannath in Puri, the deity, Jagannath grabbed her sari. And Prabhupada, he commented that, why, you know, Jagannath, why should he, that you know, that black, ugly woman, why should Jagannath be attracted to her? And Prabhupada said, I never had any such experiences. Prabhupada says, my only, although actually Prabhupada had also, I mean, he had his guru calling him in the dream to take sannyas, and then when he was on the Jaladuta, was having heart attacks, and Krishna came to him in the form of his various avatars and said, don't worry, we're rowing the boat. But Prabhupada said, I never had any such experiences. He said, my only qualification is that I believed in the order of my spiritual master, Guru Mukha Padmavakya Chitete Kariya Aika Arna Kariya Manya Asha. And in continuing this, he said this is the reason that I am successful, that I simply follow the order of my guru. So Prabhupada, he de-emphasized this kind of thing. I mean, someone said, when this devotee said to Prabhupada, one said, oh, I heard that when you were staying at Radha Damodar temple, Rupa Goswami used to come and speak to you. And Prabhupada said, well, everyone knows that. He didn't deny it, but he didn't go and say, yes, Rupa Goswami came to me and I spoke to him. He just kind of brushed it off. Yes, it's true. All right. He didn't discuss it anymore. He didn't want to discuss it anymore. Although he did discuss day and night, you're not this body. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to surrender to Krishna. He would discuss day and night the various institutional, organizational, logistical, managerial issues surrounding ISKCON. So it seems that especially our recent acharyas, they haven't emphasized this mystical side. Maybe because neophyte devotees, they get into that, like that's the real thing, and you have to, you know, be able to levitate, and then you can be a real guru or something like this. Seems that they de-emphasize, they didn't discuss these things very much. Whereas you get these, like this rascal you were talking about. Yeah, they emphasize this kind of thing. And then they attract all kinds of, you know, very sentimental people, and the emphasis is not on Shastra Gyan or service or surrender, it's just on some kind of mostly imagined, it seems, kind of experiences. So how does that relate with the question of whether you should go by train or bus, which is an example of whether you should follow the order of the guru or not? Well, yeah, that point of the mystic understanding, well, it may be that the guru has he knows something that you don't. Just like in the case of Jamadagni, Parashuram had full faith that he knows what he's doing when he orders me to kill his wife and my mother. And so, all right, I'll just do it. Although, in another circumstance, it might be arguable that instead of just following, he could have questioned first, well, could you please explain to me before I do this how this is according to dharma? Although, up to that time, throughout his whole life, he'd never had any hint that Jamalagni would ever do anything against dharma. So that question in that circumstance might have appeared to be improper. So it's very subtle, all these different... I mean, that's why I say you can't really give a yes or no answer to the question. And dharma is defined ultimately as it depends on the attitude of the performer, not even the consequences. The consequence of Arjuna fighting wasn't very good, it seemed, although Krishna thought it was very good, because he wanted the earth rid of its burden. There are many other factors to be considered, but ultimately the attitude is there. So if one thinks, well, I know better than my guru, even in material things, which it's quite likely that almost in many cases, especially in the modern world where there are so many different kinds of specialized knowledge, it may be that many disciples know things better than their guru. Just with Prabhupada's case also, I mean, his disciples, some of them knew how to operate electronic systems better than Srila Prabhupada did. So they knew, and Prabhupada might ask them, how to use this, how to use that, some electronic item. But then one has to be very careful and not think, well, I know better. I know better than he. He's just, doesn't even know. When Prabhupada first came to America, this Sally Butler showed him how to use the laundromat. There's no such thing in India. Even now, probably, I don't think they still have it. So that didn't make her superior to Srila Prabhupada, but she knew something. But then that he didn't, and so the attitude of thinking, well, I know better, that's very dangerous. So one might choose to follow, and even though it seems maybe not such a good option, often we'll find that in following the order of the guru, because one does that, even one may think, well, it's not such a good idea, but anyway, guru said I should do, that Krishna sees that and appreciates that, and that attitude, and that even if on the face of it, it might seem that going by road is better than going by train, then we might find out that by Krishna's arrangement, it doesn't work out like that. We may or we may not find out. In Shastra, I don't find any specific thing that differentiates between the material and the spiritual instructions. Although obviously, as I was saying, there are a gradation of instructions. And depending on the attitude, one may break the order of the a minor order to fulfill a more major order. If the Guru says, go from Bangalore to Ceylon and arrange everything for me, so when I come, everything is ready. So if you think, well, better you go by train. But if you think, so, goes out and then he's already on the way to the station when he thinks, well, or get some news that the trains are delayed, or he may change, fulfilling the order. It all depends on the attitude. So the general attitude should be one, yes, I'll do what the Guru says. And even in material things, if he's very strong, yes, you should go by train, he's very strong. That we should take the attitude of the Guru also, that he feels it's better, all right, let me do that, he may do that. It's not going to make that much difference. Rather than having that attitude of, no, I'm just, you know, I know better. So this may not seem very intelligent from the materialistic point of view, but we're not speaking from the materialistic point of view. So, what's the answer? Maybe, but better be careful. And again, it's not likely that the Guru will give such a heavy order. You must go by train, don't go by road. It's more likely to be, if he says you should go by train. It doesn't mean it's like, it's spoken in the imperative, but it's more like a suggestion than a direct order. So, all right, what are the other questions? Is anyone to ask anything more about this? Yeah, that's a signal that you do want to? All right.
I had this question before. There was another part of it that you don't have to
accept. Well, give the mic.
Hare Krishna. Another of the question that I had from Gopal Prabhu, that if we don't have to follow them, we don't have to accept the social issues spoken by Prabhupada, things like that. So how would we refer this?
Do we have to accept Prabhupada's outlook on social issues? Well, that it really falls in a different category to that of whether you should go by bus or by train. Because Srila Prabhupada spoke on social issues from Shastra. And it wasn't just some circumstantial, you know, go by bus or by train, but it's concerning one's whole approach to life and how one should live one's life in a manner that is conducive for spiritual advancement. So it's really in a different category altogether. And I would unhesitatingly say that to not to accept Srila Prabhupada's direction on social issues is guru avagya, or neglect of the order of the spiritual master. Of course, how to implement that, that is something else. But the spirit that Prabhupada gave, that we need to establish Varnashram society with its basic principles, that should not be neglected or rejected. Even though it goes so much against modern ideas. Yeah. America feels itself justified to be in Iraq and Afghanistan because they have to establish democracy there. They feel it's almost like a religious principle that that's worth dying for, to uphold democracy. Of course, we all know that there are various political factors involved, but they do it on the name of establishing democracy. So it's like, you know, for them it's practically sacred, the idea that there should be democracy. But Srila Prabhupada called it demon crazy. And we see in this country that democracy has been totally subverted by thieves, and it's the system is totally it works on corruption and exploitation. So for this country, definitely, if there was a good solid ruler who kept people in line, it would be much better than having these ministers who are literally murderers and rogues and thieves, and everyone knows it. They're criminals. The government is run by people who are literally criminals. The chief minister of Jharkhand was in jail for murder. And there's so many. Everyone knows. I mean, the de facto head of the government, her husband, who was assassinated. Everyone knows he was. He was a corrupt. Anyway, I don't get into that too much, but I'm just pointing out that what the modern world considers as axiomatically proper democracy, Prabhupada, he didn't like it. He was against it. He wasn't wholly against it, because in the Vedic system, there, it's not just despotism, but the rulers, they rule strongly, and it's not that everyone just votes and they make a different ruler, but there are checks and balances also. Anything else on this topic?
Just to continue with attitudes of the disciple. Sometimes I see that. Can you tell us what is the proper way to take shiksha actually? Because sometimes disciple comes and imposes something on guru and gets this.
What is the proper way? Say it in the mic so everyone can hear.
What is the proper way to get the shiksha instructions from the guru, proper attitude? Sometimes we see that disciple comes and just push up his own program and just gets kind of approval from the guru, not really hearing what guru wants him to do.
Yeah, well, that's not really taking shiksha, is it?
Yeah.
That you wanted to make that point.
I want to ask what is the proper attitude exactly?
The proper attitude is guru mukha padma vakya chitete kariya aika anakariya mani asha. But that's the simple principle. But there are checks and balances where people say, well, this kind of surrender is just blind faith. But it is surrender. That surrender is supposed to be surrender based on knowledge. It's not just, you don't just, You know, you walk up to anyone and say, well, I accept you as guru and surrender to you. But one has to, what is that Arjuna says to Krishna? No one but you can clear these doubts. What's that? So, surrender, yes. But even with Arjuna, he says to Krishna that Shishaste Hang Shadi Mang Tong Prapana. I surrender to you, I submit myself as a disciple. But he submitted his doubts also. It doesn't mean that he totally surrendered his intelligence. He maintained his intelligence also. Not in a challenging manner, but he maintained his intelligence. Because shiksha means to give instruction, but it's not exactly like beating a horse. That is one system. That is, what is that? Pashura Laguvartata, something like that. That's stated in Bhagavatam, beating an animal with a stick. But it's not like that. Rather, the guru gives instructions by which Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayo Manmana. All these terms are there. Avismiti Krishna Padara Vindayo, by which the mind can be fixed on Krishna. So that means that the whole consciousness, the mind, the intelligence, the whole consciousness can be fixed on Krishna. That can only that cannot be so just by giving an order. You always think of Krishna. It's not so simple, because the mind is all, it's moving here, changing there, considering different possibilities. That's the very nature of the mind. So the guru gives instruction by which the mind can be fixed upon Krishna. That means by which the intelligence is satisfied to make Krishna the object of life and surrender to Krishna. Unless the intelligence is satisfied, yeah, please take it out. Unless one's intelligence is satisfied, then one will not actually be able to do that. One other way of doing it is by fear, and we find that in some religions, they instill fear that you have to believe in Allah or Jesus or something, otherwise you burn in hell. But there's no development of love there. So development of love is based on trust, and trust is based on seeing that this person is trustworthy. So that means applying one's intelligence. So the guru clears doubts, which is by discussing them and giving proper replies. Or sometimes not even verbally, but sometimes by other methods, they may demonstrate. But generally verbally, by practice and by precept, they show. So when it said surrender, that should be understood. That means one surrenders one's intelligence to be guided, not that just you stop thinking. That's not at all the meaning of surrender. That's a misunderstanding. But Arjuna had faith that Krishna is the right person to guide me, and even if he says something which seems absurd, it's because of my insufficiency that I don't understand. We find that. My insufficiency that I don't understand it. When Krishna said to Arjuna, Imam Vasude Yogam Proktavana Hamavyayam, I spoke this knowledge to Vivasva, and then Arjuna interrupted. What is that? Param Janna Vivasvataha. What's the first line? Katamaitad Vijaniyam Tvamado Proktavaniti. How is it possible? You know, Vivasvan, he's billions of years going back, and you're just on the same age as me. Katame tadvijaniyam. How can I properly understand this? That you spoke to Vivaswam so long ago. He didn't say, well, it's just ridiculous. What are you talking about? But he asked, how can I understand this? So the same thing with Parashuram and Jamadagni. He had faith that, okay, he said it. If anyone else had told him to do, if Katavya Arjuna had come up and told him, cut off your mother's head, he would have cut off Katavya Arjuna's head, which he did eventually anyway. So it depends on who's saying it also. Who should we have faith in? That we have to see, you know, who is worth having faith in, and what are the criteria for having faith in. It's a very intelligent process, actually. It's not at all this. That's again why I surmise that Prabhupada and our recent acharyas, I mean up to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they didn't emphasize this kind of mystical side which so many others do, because they wanted to keep it on the platform of intelligence, which would be the actual way in which we can advance in spiritual life. But if we keep it on the sentimental or we emphasize the mystic level or just some vague terms, you know, like you see all these people, like another Gurvi, there's this lady kind of guru who just loves it. Love. But, you know, what's the meaning? She embraces everyone and you feel love. But there's no meaning. There's no meaning to it. It's just some sentiment. You still have your birth, death, old age and disease, and your adhyatmik, adhibhotik, and adhidaivik, and it's, and you know, while she embraces you, you feel some love. But there's nothing there, you know. So, I guess that's why Prabhupada, there's no doubt that Prabhupada's love and compassion, and this was boundless, but he didn't just talk about these things without qualifying them, without giving the proper shastric definition of them. Otherwise, if we just talk love, compassion, you know, without qualifying it, then we just, if it's just all on the platforms of feelings, then it'll be, then that what happens is you get people, you know, like Mother Teresa is a great hero in ISKCON today. That's what you get, which is totally bogus. She was a bogus person. But her idea of, she had so much compassion because, you know, she had her sisters go out on the street and find people who'd been dying, who'd been lying on the street all their lives, and brought them to her home so they could die in her home. Oh, how compassionate. You know, it's just a totally mundane concept of compassion, but Mother Teresa is lauded by many in ISKCON as being so compassionate. But she was completely blind to the knowledge of the self. She was actually violent in not propagating Krishna consciousness and propagating bodily consciousnesses as being something spiritual. But due to lack of understanding of what is the meaning of love, we have these kind of, you know, we hear people talk about the compassion of Mother Teresa when Prabhupada said that Vasa, actually Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati called it this verse, the compassion of Vasudevdatta far exceeds that of Jesus, what to speak of Mother Teresa. I mean, even, so, what is the definition of love according to Shastra? Anyone? Well, specifically the word is given. Prem.
Engaging the senses in pleasing service.
You don't know? You do know, but you don't know. Atendriya priti vancha tare bale kam krishnendriya priti Ichha dhare premana The desire to satisfy one's own senses is known as lust. The desire to satisfy Krishna is called prem. And in the purport it's discussed how there's all kinds of sense gratification goes on in the name of altruism, humanitarianism, nationally, all, you know, humanitarianism. People of Iraq, we are coming on a humanitarian mission. Drop the bombs. We love you. Jesus loves you. This is a Christian bomb. Don't worry, you've got blown to pieces by a Christian bomb. And those who survived, we'll give them hot pizzas because we love you. Then, anything else? What's the other question?
Related to this subject, there is another that one should meditate on Krishna and also one should be fully dedicated to Guru. So sometimes we have people who just say, just by Guru's mercy, everything happens. Other devotees try to understand and try to.
Well, Prabhupada talked about that, didn't he? I mean, he said that Arjuna didn't say, well, it's all your mercy, Krishna, and I'm just going to go and sleep on the chariot, and by your mercy, everything will happen. His mercy comes in the form of instruction, which by following, then Guru and Krishna are pleased. So many times people come and ask me for blessings. I say, okay, but you have to do your work also. And if you do your work, then the blessings will be there automatically. Generally, blessing, it's like, you know, in modern Vaishnava society, people all the time come to sannyasis, I happen to know, asking for blessings. But as far as I understand, blessings are generally requested when there's some particular major tasks to be undertaken, just like Yudhishthira asking blessings from Bhishma and Drona and Ashwatthama and others before starting the fight. They ask for blessings that we can defeat you. So it's not that you just, you know, just wander around asking for blessings at every moment, left, right and center. It's if there's some specific major task. Otherwise, general blessings are there all the time. The children every day come before the parents and bow down to them, and the parents put their hand up in a symbol of blessing. But it's not required that, you know, it's not normally all the time asking for blessing. It's almost like a doubt that it's there. You should know it's there. And also, you know, if you have a very shallow approach, just asking for blessings, like, you work hard, you try, you do your service, then the blessings will come. Not that just like this, you know, I'm not very serious, but I want your blessings because I'm not very serious. So you have to make up for my lack of commitment. It's not going to work. You have to do your work. Yeah, what else?
I often heard how devotees say that for one guru, he is an old school guru, but others are
little
different.
Is this,
what means old school?
Well, old school means Yogam Prakta Vana. It's the same thing. Krishna said to Arjuna, Sa-eva-yang-maya-teja, yoga prokta puratanaha. Do you know what the word puratan means? It means old. Krishna gave the same old knowledge. Krishna, acting as guru to Arjuna, spoke to him the same old knowledge that he spoke to Vivasvan. The knowledge doesn't change. So, Prabhupada might have been seen as an upstart by some of his godbrothers for some of the methodology he adopted for conveying that knowledge, but, or as Prabhupada wrote about his own guru, old wine in new bottles, which is an English saying. You probably have that saying in your language also, as your culture is wine-based. So you have that saying also in your culture, yeah. So methodology may be different, or even the terminology may be somewhat different. As Prabhupada in Easy Journey to Other Planets, the first book that Srila Prabhupada wrote, he used a different terminology, or kind of scientific terminology, but his message was the same. So the message, there's actually no question of old school guru or new school guru, just as there's no question of differentiating between a bona fide guru and a bogus guru. We say bogus guru, but if someone's bogus, he can't be a guru. But we just say that to differentiate between those who are real gurus and those who are just pretending to be gurus. So in the same way, there's not really any old school gurus or new school gurus, there's just gurus, that's all. And all of them teach yoga puratana, the old system of yoga, or Krishna consciousness. And methodology in doing so may be different, but techniques may differ. But the message has to be the same, otherwise one is not a guru at all. Phalena parichyate. One judges by the result. This was actually Prabhupada's bottom line, practically, in judging what's bona fide and what isn't. In that discussion, or by correspondence with Dr. Stahl, he cited the effect of the Hare Krishna mantra. Dr. Stahl was saying that, well, I don't think Bhagavad Gita calls for constant chanting. And Prabhupada's ultimate argument was, judged by the result. It's given by Shastra, it's given by authority, and see the result. You know, chickens don't roar, and lions don't squeak like mice. So, you know, if someone's delivering the goods, you can see it in their disciples. Lions don't give birth to rabbits, and rabbits don't give birth to lions. So, the guru, in many ways, may be judged. You see the quality of what his products, you could say. And even if there's only one, there may be a series of miscarriages, but if there's one child, just like Sachimata, she had how many children? Was it nine sons who died? But then came Vishwarup and Vishvamba. So there may be various disciples who are not up to the mark, but there should be some who catch the message and are able to pass it on. And such persons shine like moons in the society. Anything else? We'll finish this. So you'll be a moon. Glorify your guru.
Hare Krishna.